have everyone kind of finish up their conversations. Oh, that was fast. Okay. We'll go ahead and get things rolling here. This is not a coup of the Board of Supervisors, by the way, to take over the Joint Emergency Communications Center Policy Board. There are three members here. Rod Sullivan is here and going to be participating in one of the conversations. And when that happens, Supervisor Harney will be serving as only to monitor and not to participate in the conversation to avoid any kind of potential open meetings violations, things of that nature. This is on tape as well if anyone wants to have an issue with that.
So is anybody going to monitor his facial reaction?
Yeah, what kind of language are we talking here?
Anything he writes on the board.
I like it. All right, so, and that's just on that one particular item, item 5. Okay, so let's go ahead and call this meeting to official order. We are recognizing alternates, and if we could go around the room, that would be great. Dave, you want to start?
Dave Wilson, Emergency Management.
Lion for Crabbit.
Natasha, Johnson County Social Services.
Rod Sullivan, Johnson County Board of Supervisors.
Tom Marcus, Iowa City City.
John Lindell, City of Portland.
Jeff Stone, Attorney.
Susan Mims, Iowa City.
Chris Hoffman, North Liberty City Council.
Tom Jones, JECC.
And I'm Kathy House, Secretary.
Kathy is. All right, thank you. We do have action to approve the minutes of the June 26, 2015 Policy Board meeting. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded for approval of the minutes. Discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone against? Motion is approved. We'll move to comments from the public. Any residents here? Don't see any. We'll move to item 4, Executive Director's Update. Tom.
Include a little lengthy report in there, just a few items going on over the last couple months of July and August. I'll just kind of highlight them. The end of June, 1st of July, I attended the National HR Conference the first time attending something like this. I thought it was very beneficial. I actually learned a lot of classes did, and sessions did relate to things that go on here and to further enhance training is in management. As Terrence pointed out at the top, the letterhead, the cryptic letters is just, I'm testing Windows 10, and when you convert an Office 13 document in Word to a PDF, it encrypts the header. So
I was actually going to test you on
it. I looked at this and thought it was just me.
Yeah.
We're going to test you on the new code system for here and see if anyone can
It did that, so
break it.
Okay. That was a good bug to learn about. This year, the JEC participated in the Johns County Fair. First year that JEC has done something like that. We set up a booth, took a 911 phone out there, some literature, some coloring sheets about 911 for kids. Had two dispatchers volunteer time to come out and sit in the booth, work the phone, work with kids. Feedback was great. A lot of positive feedback about it. And we were actually surprised at how many children didn't know their address. That was kind of one of the takeaways that we noted from being out there. So, and that's a lot of things that what the dispatchers and our staff was doing when we were working with kids is making sure they knew their address, where they were, things like that. So that was good. We're looking to do that again in the future. Kind of supplemental to that, the following week, the Solon Economist did an article on children dialing 911. So they called out here, and we participated in that interview with them. On children dialing 911, some tips and things like that for such. We settled a grievance that was pending arbitration that was discussed a little bit in our last meeting, and that was at the 1st of August, so we were able to meet and work that out together to avoid anything further on that, and it worked out favorable for everyone. August 11th, met with Iowa County and Linn County and Raycom representatives to have an initial meeting with Iowa County about the potential to join on to our radio system consortium with the other counties. They're looking at exploring some options. They wanted to talk with us about our experiences, you know, recommendations, you know, early planning, word ahead. So it sounds like they were going to engage Ellert and Associates, the same consultant that Johnson and Linn used, and they're going to start going down the path of exploring the option to connect to our system as well. So future information may come our way on that as those things develop, as Eller does their study and recommendations. I did send an update email to everyone on the 19th of August. We were able to work with TAC 10 and to get them to agree to amend the terms to move it to the 12 months notice of intent from 6, not to renew. And also the other small provision there just to allow us more time to continue to work with the user advisory group and such. And after meeting with them, kind of the direction to move forward has been to work out terms and continue the relationship with our current vendors. So I've been working with the user advisory group, Jeff Stone, and members on that to work on an agreement that we'll bring to the policy board in the future for a recommendation. The 26th, Brandon, Todd, and I went to a seminar on excelling as a manager supervisor in Cedar Rapids. That was a one-day seminar. Again, we picked up a lot of good information there, especially Brandon and Todd. Brandon going on his second year, Todd being in his first year. In their new roles, we felt it was really appropriate training, and they took a lot away from it, too, to help them in their new roles here and actually went over some situations that we deal with. It was kind of nice to meet with several other people from the area. A lot of Cedar Rapids, Iowa City folks were there, so we're able to network a little bit and discuss, kind of figure out we all have similar situations that we deal with at work when it comes to managing employees. So that was good.
Who was at that meeting, Tom? Was it geared toward government type of work, or was it all over the spectrum?
It was
spectrum? Okay.
Yeah. There was a broad range. They actually didn't do kind of an introduction at first, which is different. So just talking to a lot of people on break, we figured out where different people from Rockwell people were there, and there was, like I said, there's a broad range. Somebody from Johnson County was even there down at the medical examiner's office. Then I'll kind of move into another item here that is kind of an informational item, and we can kind of talk about if there's any interest in pursuing this. Earlier this summer, I was contacted by Johnson County's sustainability group, kind of their green team, inquiring about our annual electrical usage at the JEC. I provided them with those numbers. I was able to go back and get data since JEC had opened and provide with annual electrical usage. And they were working on a solar energy project. And so what they did with our numbers, and they looked at stuff, and they were trying to see if a solar project would be beneficial like they did at Secondary Roads. And they wanted to know if the JEXA would have any interest in doing any solar energy options out here to help supplement kind of our electrical usage. They're kind of the experts in this, and so in meeting with them, I met with Terrence, Dave Wilson, and I on September 10th, met with them out here. They kind of explained a little bit about what they're doing, gave us some high-level information about it, but mainly wanted to come out and offer to us that if we were interested, they would offer their services to the JEC and assist us if we were interested in going down this with like an RFP to the vendors, any technical assistance, project management, again, if there was interest. And then they would also work on compiling a cost analysis with me in a spreadsheet and help give us some numbers there about our energy consumption cost. So that was something if we were interested in, they would be willing to work with us. Again, they were kind of the experts on this. They've done one project now with the county, and they're working on some others with other county buildings, and they're trying to take advantage of some tax credits that would end December 31st of 2016, I believe. So if there's something that we have interest in, I can reach back out with them and we can have further discussion, or I can get some more information for this group if we want to look at that cost analysis, and I can present that back and see if there's anything we want to discuss on it. And then on September 10th, Jeff Stone and I met with officials of the University of Iowa, talked about the microwave site between Oakdale and the Blank Honor site, which is the path that may or may not get some interference due to the crane they're building for the new dorm down by Blank Honors. We also talked about existing fiber connectivity that we have today with the university for redundant connections, and also the Oakdale Tower site, the future of that site, just trying to go into some initial discussions about locking that in or what the plans were. And the university did agree to pay for the fiber backup link that's going to be between Oakdale and Blank Honors. We walked away from that meeting with that. We still don't know, obviously, because the construction's not 100% complete, or they've just started the early process with installing the crane. But they are going to go ahead and cover the cost to provide the fiber connectivity. So if there was any intermittent, hiccups with that microwave link due to the crane, we would have the fiber to fail over to. Second, they did then agree to, we're going to build this into the 2080 in the future here, memorialize our agreement with the existing fiber connections that we use from them today. They agreed that they would put that in there, and that they're going to continue to allow us the use of that fiber.
Tom, who at the university made these agreements? Who's representing the university in these discussions?
David Kef.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't pronounce it. And then Gabe Helzer, legal counsel for the university, and then David Visson was in the room from Department of Public Safety.
There's just so many vacancies over there.
And in the past when we did this, we'd worked with George Hollins, then we did the original agreement, and then we worked with David on these. So we're going to, again, formalize these, bring them back and for signature, but initial meeting went well, and these are things that are agreed to. One thing that we did come out of the meeting was Mr. Keff asked us to inquire about obtaining a proposal from Harris regarding the Oakdale Tower site. As far as moving it or what it would take. They want to do basically see a cost analysis. They didn't give us any, no deadlines, no, hey, it's going to go away at this time or by this time, like we had heard, but they did say that there has been talk that they would like it to go away, but they also want to know the cost and the impact on that. We did explain to them that their university services do utilize this infrastructure and it is a benefit to them, and they did ask me for a list of services that tower provides, and I did come up with kind of a document on the importance of it, all the services does provide, reasons why it shouldn't go away, but they did ask us to reach out and get a proposal, bring it back to them, and see if the cost is really worth what their plans are. So we are going to pursue, getting them a proposal for that, and hopefully that will the issue will go one way or another. One thing they did state is even if something were to happen in the future, there was no rush to, they would honor any existing agreements, and beyond the existing agreement, no rush to move us off. I mean, there no drop dead date to you have to be out of there. So we're willing to work with us. They just want to, I think, see analysis of what it would take to move it. And last item, two items, met with Harris briefly last Friday with Linn County, talking about system upgrade that's going to take place in fiscal year 17 per our maintenance contract, which will be a switch upgrade. It'll be a coordinated effort between both counties. This is kind of a preliminary information gathering meeting, as they need to start getting details for engineering so they can start planning this project, as it'll be getting about 18 months out at this time. So just a preliminary meeting there we had with them on that topic. And then last but not least, I did send a revised copy. The unaudited financials were for FY15 were included in this packet, but as the auditor found yesterday, there's a small change when they did July and August, so they did amend those financials, and I sent those out in the packet. So the unaudited financials for fiscal year 15 are included, and our financial audit is scheduled for November 2nd through the 4th, again with the auditor coming back as he does in January each year, and present the final audit for Jex's FY15 financials. I think that's it. Any questions?
One of the things that came out of the meeting with the county's green team was that Tom and I did not feel like we wanted to go any further on that until we had at least more information and then have them come back and identify and chart an actual cost analysis. They had provided some information about the cost analysis and the chart and the expense of putting solar at the secondary roads facility. So at minimum, we asked that organization to communicate that information back to Tom. And I think at that point, if the board's comfortable, Tom would just continue to review and then potentially provide a white page to look at the pros and cons of that kind of proposal. If people are comfortable with that.
Are they, I mean, I think it's always worth looking at for sure, and seeing that cost benefit. Is the green team, are they doing that at no cost?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the Board of Supervisors, when we put our strategic planning together this past 2 to 3 years ago, we wanted to look at alternative energy, obviously, and I know other governments are doing the same, and with the success of what we're hoping to have at the Secondary Roads facility, and if you, as you drive by that facility, you'll see that solar array, to put that at several locations, if the potential's there, the tax credit is there, it certainly seems worth the effort. The first, you look at the analysis of costs over a 20-year period, and it is very beneficial. So, and that could be a savings down the road that could be for this facility as well. So,
somewhat related, but on a much higher level, it was interesting. I just had an article sent to me from a friend who still lives out in New England where I grew up. And the issue was the billions of dollars that they have spent in New England on tax credits for solar and wind energy. And when they had peak demands not too long ago, those alternative energy sources did not put anything back into the grid. So it did not help the grid at all, because as those temperatures were at peak levels, every homeowner was cranking up their air conditioning to keep their own home cool. And so the idea that the energy was actually going back into the grid, and so the argument that they were making, and I haven't analyzed it in detail, the argument that they were making was that we were spending all this money on tax credits, but it was not really diminishing the need for the grid and the level of capacity on the grid, which was, I quite frankly, found disappointing.
Yeah. All right, any other questions for Tom on his director's report?
If it pleases the policy board, I think we should ask Tom to send a thank you to the employees who volunteered at the fair.
Any other conversation on that?
And we did add, speaking of that, we did add photos on the website for that event and the staff working with the kids so at the fair. So we did start to add a new page on the website for that type of activities.
All right, we'll move to discussion by Latasha Deloach on disproportionate minority contact as it relates to public safety dispatch. And again, Supervisor Sullivan is here as well.
I'm making rad difference.
Okay.
Well, thank you all for having us. In short, Latasha and I had been having some conversations around, as you probably know, Latasha works for Johnson County, and part of her job for Johnson County is disproportionate minority contact. That's a federal requirement that we have when working with juveniles and law enforcement. And part of her job with Johnson County is that she's the disproportionate minority contact coordinator. Is that the right title?
Sure.
I don't know. I might have just given her a pay raise. I don't know. But anyway, so we're talking about the fact that Latasha's had a lot of contact with the various law enforcement agencies. She's familiar with North Liberty, Corville, Iowa City, PD. She's had a lot of conversations with them. But with Jeff, there's actually a kind of an earlier intercept point where she has never had any real contact. And so oftentimes when we talk to officers, they will tell you that they very rarely actually just see something happening and pull over. They're typically dispatched to a location. And so that means the first interact, really, when we're talking about disproportionate minority contact, is actually that dispatch. And we hadn't really ever backed it all the way out to that point. But, theoretically, there's somebody who calls up and says, there's a suspicious person walking down my street. I don't know how Jack dispatchers handle that kind of thing. Do they get into, well, ma'am, what makes that person suspicious? Or, you know, I assume that they probably just kind of err on the side of, well, we'll make sure somebody sends a car. But that's an area where we think there might be some opportunity for some discussion about how things are done and if there's a way to maybe take some of the expertise that Latasha has and work it into that scenario.
And so the other piece of that is just, I mean, I think from the different groups that I'm getting this community feedback, a part of my job is to try to pass the information back to the community about how it works. And we've had some correspondence with Tom a little bit about that this is a central location and it's sent out to the different cities about whatever call has come in is going out to the different cities. And then those cities are making decisions about if they're going to follow up with a call for that call to service. And so my question is trying to figure out, is this policy that every call that comes in, someone goes out? I know each city probably may do it differently, or maybe it's completely the same policy in every city, but just trying to figure out if it's a policy, where is it so that I can find it so that I can relay it back to different groups, or if it's a practice, is it being looked at and analyzed as other policies or practices that are done, and looking at is it a part of creating racial disparities, is what the concern is. Is it that we need to do some more community education about just because a couple kids are walking down the street doesn't necessarily mean that they're into criminal activity. And so we're just trying to figure out where is that point, because we're trying to, the most effective way to decrease disparities is the entry points. And this is a decision point, an entry point. And so we're trying to do some looking at that. Is there something that is coming across from the community standpoint? We know that folks are calling. Or is it something that we need to ask an additional question from dispatch? When is these, I'm not talking about someone's calling, someone's doing something really threatening, you know, those type of things we're not talking about. We're talking about when we're seeing police are being dispatched out for young black men walking down the street, or, you know what I mean, those type of things versus, we're not here to talk about someone just robbed my house. That's not what we're here for. But looking at these other things where sometimes when that interaction happens, it doesn't end up going over so well because people are on the defense. Like, we're just walking down the street, what's the problem? And sometimes those things can escalate. So just trying to look specifically at what is happening there. Is there a policy? Is it a practice? And are there specific questions that we can ask that could potentially eliminate causing some racial disparities in our community? So I'm trying to figure out if that's coming from JEC. Is this a collective thing that you all can collect together as one report, what all the cities do, or is that something that each individual city needs to submit or, you know, send a link or a policy or something about what you all are doing?
So, Tom, what's our standard procedure? What's our SOP in terms of responding to it? Not responding to a call, but taking the call, and then how do you transfer that call to the individual law enforcement agency? There has to be a standard protocol.
Yeah, I kind of put a little bit of that in the packet here in my correspondence with them. I did include the two excerpts out of the that we use from that's been standardized training across the board that dispatchers receive. So I did include the form in the packet called a standard description of a person and the standard description of a vehicle. I did include those two things. The staff obtains that information, what they're doing, and then relays it to the agency. I think the biggest thing that I was trying to tell them with in my response back is the communication center, we don't make a determination for law enforcement to respond. Our protocol is to gather the information. We ask these standard questions. Yeah, they do ask, what are they doing that makes them suspicious? And then we relay that call back to the agency. And what our goal is try to put it on, it's on them whether or not they respond. It's just our job is to push it out. We want to get it out and get it to them as fast as we can. Like we were saying, you know, telephone requests, for instance, You know, they call in and ask to speak to an officer. We take the information out. We forward it to the officer. We don't know if the officer calls them back unless they come back on and say, called back, handled. We just make sure that the agency, the end agency, gets the assignment. What they do with it, that's on them. So our job, we just gather the information and then we assign it.
And we've heard, I think, nationally, a number of 9/11 calls that have come in where you have a 9/11 operator going off policy that you just described and asking all sorts of questions when terrible things are happening at the same time, instead of getting to the point where the vehicle is dispatched.
Yeah.
And I think probably, and maybe you should tell us this, how does our policy compare to 9/11 centers across the country? Is this the norm? Is this the standard? Personally, I don't necessarily want radio dispatchers engaging in lengthy conversations. I know for a fact, and we've had these conversations with Latasha at our meetings, that there's times when the officers will say, well, that doesn't constitute a need for, you know, a squad to be sent to that area. You know, what activity is generated just because there's some kids walking down the street is not, that's not a crime. And so what's, sometimes I'm sure they go out there and they usually end up talking to the person that made the call to kind of back them off of the issue of why they're so alarmed that some kids are out in the street. So
the biggest
I
thing
think that's the point of contact. You know, you people are sitting here in a cave, quite frankly, and not really having any understanding of what's really happening on the street. So I think each individual department has ultimately that responsibility.
And that is exactly how we operate. I mean, our goal, we've told them multiple times, we don't make decisions if it's civil or a criminal call. Our staff's not trained to ask do the law enforcement's job. They're just to gather the information, what they are told, relay it, and then the end officer makes, the agency makes the determination. That's, we've preached that since day one because we don't want them making those decisions. That's not what they're here to do. That's not what probably our insurance wants us to do from a liability standpoint. And that's what we've worked together with all of them is from a liability standpoint, what is our role? And it's just to get the information out as quick as possible, let the end agency make the decision, and that's it. We are mainly just a, what do you call it, the information gathering.
Well, you're a conduit.
Yeah, we're the...
And so when people make the comment that Rod indicates in the memo about, well, we just respond to calls, well, you're the conduit for the call.
Correct.
If there is a pattern of inappropriate call, that goes back to the public.
Yeah.
That goes to the point where that call originates and somebody makes that determination. And like so many things in life, we all interpret things differently based on our histories and our personal, you know, experiences. And quite frankly, some people make calls on things that others would not consider even an issue. And it gets that, you know, into the system, which then it's ultimately the law enforcement agency, how they react to that particular call, how they respond on the scene and deal with that in terms of the communication. That's the real point of conflict. Rod, I don't know that we would want these folks discerning whether it's a legitimate call or not. I think that call has to be transferred to the agency.
I don't think we're really here to talk about the JEC policy. I think Latasha needs to know at some point there's a decision being made. Where is it being made? All of a sudden we realized, gosh, maybe that decision is being made to some degree at Jack, and she's never spoken there.
Yeah.
So I think I'm hearing you say pretty clearly no.
Yeah, let me give you a great example of garbage in, garbage out. So to support what Tom said last night, we get a call, I'm watching the football game, 9:30, 10-ish, from dispatch, said, hey, we had one call, didn't call in on 911, it called in on the routine line. Says he saw a tornado on the ground between 965 and the causeway. What do you want us to do? Here's what we've done so far. And I said, did we get any other calls? No. Have we had any damage reports? No. Did you send an officer in the area? Yeah, there was one close by. He went out, couldn't find anything. What weather service said? Nothing to support on radar. We're not doing anything. Okay, that's what we needed to know. Thanks. when there's those gray areas or those unknowns, I think it's pretty consistent that Jack will contact the agency. In that case, last night, it was a storm thing. It wasn't a human contact, but it was me, and said, you know, how do you want us to handle that? So I'd support that. I think their job is to be a clearinghouse, and it's, you know, it, good or bad, it's your garbage in, garbage out, or it's information in, information out. But they really are just the conduit. I mean, they don't control what types of calls come in, and we would be pretty annoyed with them if they tried to manage that call themselves. We want them to give it off to the agency having jurisdiction, where it's police, fire, ambulance, emergency management, or what. So, I mean, just my experience in the, you know, the 8 years I've been down here, they're pretty consistent since we've opened about following that policy and passing it through.
So for further clarification for what I apologize unless I have been very clear. I recognize that Tom is saying that Jack's initial responsibility is to pass information. I guess my further follow-up with other city folks from different communities being here is, if there's a policy or a practice, is there any way that you all can send it to me so that I can relay that information to the community? I think that's where I'm coming from. Like, if there's a policy that the city of Coralville, North Liberty, Iowa City has, yes, can you all send that to me so that I can relay this out to people? Because I'm trying to help with misinformation is my purpose of coming here, because you all are here together. So that I've already had that response from Tom. I'm clear that they're passing on. I'm asking other folks, can you send me that policy, that information? Because when I'm sitting at a table and people are on 25 about it, I could say, here's the policy. You know, that's why I'm here. And if there needs to be further clarification about the policy or how it's practiced, then that's an opportunity for people to specifically contact the different governments that have that policy to say, we have issue with this policy, blah, blah, blah. So that's what I'm doing. I'm here to do my job and just to grab information. And I know you all are here. I've already had the response from Tom. I'm just clarifying so that it's not a misunderstanding that I think that I'm coming at the dispatchers, because I'm not. In no way. I'm just trying to get clarification because I sit on multiple committees and this has come up multiple times, and I thought I would come here and be able to gather that information faster than
and we
chase
can
everybody around.
And I can continue, you know, and we review ours, and I'll I can continue to review. I'm just looking at the review date on the some of the policies. Obviously, we can't issue out our SOPs because they contain tactical responses, but this one was last reviewed in 6-1 of 13. So, I mean, I can review, and this is the one specifically to dispatching calls for service, and essentially it's a very blanket statement just because we don't want to get involved with that. It's information in, we turn it around right away. I did give you the two forms out of it that we can, that are basically just standard forms that anybody could see. And again, that's it. And in the past, I know we've had, you know, when you talk about the public education, I think I answered with Rod that, or my response back, or maybe Rod, or one of our conversations. That's been a big thing that we encounter about it. One thing that we hear from the agencies is one of our jobs is to relay the information as we receive it. You know, we do tell our staff, we don't want you to make changes because we want you to relay the facts as they were given to you. But there's times that the callers, I mean, we understand that goes to a blogger. You know, Iowa City reblogs our stuff. You know, we understand there's calls. So there's sometimes they, you know, we ask them to, you know, they may change a description from the way they're given, but I would say a lot of this does relate to the way the public calls it in. And some of the things that maybe terms or language they use would be a bigger thing than kind of that we would encounter here. And a lot of it just comes from the callers. I mean, sometimes we go back to make those tapes and
misinterpreted. You mean by reblogging and we change it, you mean toning it down, the colorful language?
Yes, we may
the colorful language
that's used, our staff may tone that down because we don't relay that word for word over the airways either. But we do instill in the staff, though, that, you know, you are to document things as it's heard, and obviously we have the call, we have the recording that, so we could, you know, back it up if there was any questions later, but you know, we do tell them to document things as they're received, and a lot of times I would say that the public sometimes needs a little education on
And you know, Tom, I can tell you that our staff takes calls, and we'll take the time, I'm sure, if somebody were to become profane or to use racially intoned language, we'll say something to them. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily, you know, in terms of public safety, think we have the time at 9/11 to be engaging in those kinds of conversations. You take the information, I think the protocol is take the information as completely and as quickly as you can and transfer it to the reporting responding agency. It's kind of the protocol that we follow.
Exactly.
But Latasha, at the end of the day, every department has their general orders and specific orders on how they deal with situations. But I can tell you in terms of police work, it all comes down to the point of contact. And the point of contact is the most crucial part of whether it is an appropriate contact or not. And that is, throughout the country, left to the individual discretion of the responding officer. And in my opinion, it has to be left that way. That doesn't mean it's always handled correctly. And when you get incidences where it isn't, it's the responsibility of the administration of that department to make sure that that's dealt with. But when it comes to DMC in terms of the relationship and the contact, that is at the point of contact. I would say, though, that backing it all the way up to the beginning, I think some DMC is created by the call itself. There's no doubt in my mind that some people, you know, they're not culturally aware or concerned or care, and they will make statements. They will direct their efforts to have the police respond based on racial makeup rather than on the facts of the case. I don't doubt that that occurs.
You know, Tom, as you've been speaking, I've been thinking of something that's not quite related, but maybe a little related. So I know a gentleman in Iowa City who has a pretty low IQ, who calls 911 frequently. And Tom, your people probably would know just by me saying that. The person has. I mean, I think it's a real problem, frankly. I mean, he calls a lot. And I'm always amazed at how much time Iowa City PD spends with this guy. I would think at some point it would become, there'd be more of a sit-down kind of lecture, you know, look, this can't continue. It doesn't seem to have happened yet, but I would imagine at some point that probably should occur. Does that ever happen? If we've got somebody who just is afraid of teenagers and they live in the neighborhood of Southeast Junior High, I could see where that would be cause you folks a lot of problem, or, you know, similarly, John, in by Northwest. As a matter of fact, I've taken a call from an older lady who lives by Northwest that, what am I going to do about all these kids? And I said, where do you live again? You know, but how do you folks...
I think that, you know, when it becomes a point of, you know, creating just an unnecessary demand, you know, I'm sure our department, as it moves up the ranks, the department ends up probably talking to those individuals, but if they have a predilection towards that kind of behavior,
pretty hard to change people.
It's pretty hard to change, and the way the state's moved away from those responsibilities, I suggest to you that over the decades, we're getting more and more of those types of calls. And again, local government, from my perspective, as a closed institutions, we are the ones that end up, because we talk to everybody. Anybody that walks through that door, you'd be amazed at how many face-to-face conversations we have with repeat customers on a regular basis. And that chew up hours of staff time. And quite frankly, that's kind of the role we're left in because other agencies have kind of just started to defund all those things, especially in the area of social services. You know that.
And I assume, Tom, you guys, again, you probably might recognize the number, but it's still just getting dispatched the same way.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. We've got a few of those.
Tom, to Latasha's question, I'm assuming that our general orders and more specific orders are all public record.
We'll be glad.
Okay, so that you could have Sam or whoever provide those to her. And then the other thing I would say, you know, the change that I think is positive, at least in Iowa City, and I'm not exactly sure where Coralville and North Liberty are, is on the body cameras. And we've had those up and running for 6 weeks, maybe?
Yeah, well, we've actually had them up for years, but we didn't have them
on
per
all,
person.
Right.
Yeah.
So all of our officers now have body cameras. And certainly my goal, when Tom and I first talked about this, and I encouraged Tom to use some grant money that we had coming in for this, was that it would help on both sides of the equation. It's going to help hold our officers more accountable, particularly in the areas where we have the highest number of complaints, which is with minority members of the community. But it also does protect the officers when there are complaints that prove not to be valid. I would tell you to encourage people who feel, and we're always doing training and retraining. We've got more training coming up in October.
Yeah, we have gear, and I think in October, and then
yeah.
We have Dr.
Moore.
Yeah, coming in in November.
Yeah, but I would encourage you, Latasha, as you're talking to people in the community, to remind them or make them aware, if they're not aware, that our officers are wearing body cameras, and so there is video documentation now. There should be of all of those encounters. And secondly, we are the only city in the state that has a community police review board. And if they feel that they are treated unfairly, unjustly, they are more than welcome to file a complaint, and it will be investigated. They may or may not like the way it's investigated, but I think for any people who certainly know Tom, he's sitting in on those interviews now. And I think, as we all know at this point, those camera tapes are public record, depending on whether there's an investigation going on and stuff. So there might be some issues there. But there are efforts to do that. And I think, I guess I would suggest that even if a formal complaint is not made, I would have to assume that if it was brought to the attention of Tom, Chief Hargadine, that there was an issue, particularly repeated issues with one or two or more officers, that they would make more of an effort to review the tapes of those officers to look at what additional training potentially needed to be done with those officers. I certainly would expect that of our city manager and of our police chief.
You know, I don't think it should be lost on anybody that, you know, just in the last 2 years, this issue has really come to the forefront across the country.
Oh, yeah.
And I think what Susan is talking about is one of the primary reasons for that, and that's this stuff is on film now. Mm-hmm. You know, people saying what they saw or thinking what they saw is now in hard film on a lot of these things, and I think it's pretty alarming, you know, the number of incidents that we've seen and how just how coarse those films are. But I think that is helping to shape kind of the direction we're going in terms of how we respond in law enforcement. So I think that's the biggest potential change to start to get this corrected. Besides the things that you're doing in terms of public education and those things too.
To provide some satisfaction to you hearing your question, have you reached out to, I assume, I don't want to be redundant, when I talked to Ryan up in North Liberty, you reach out to the police departments and all of these in Coralville, North Liberty, and Iowa City in regards to the question that you're asking earlier about a policy on how you handle a first contact.
So that's why I came here.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of the different cities are here, so I can ask one. Just trying to.
Okay, so if
you have direct questions back,
okay.
That I could provide that. That's my only purpose here.
Yeah.
I appreciate.
You
just
haven't
wanted
had
to
any
know
contact.
If the people who are from the different cities could send me the policy and practice, and if I have questions, I can follow up, and then I can follow up the community groups that I.
Okay, so just to be clear, you haven't had the contact directly with
our
PDs.
I'm pretty sure they all know my email well, and
okay.
If I send them a question, they usually can get back to me. I was just trying to. We had contacted Tom, and there was a request to come, and so not from Tom, but to come and talk to you all. So I'm here to talk to you all. And now I can hopefully, those who have the ability to send in the policy, if I don't hear from those different cities, then I will contact them directly and ask them for that information so that can be passed on.
I'll mention the chief editor before.
I just talked to him yesterday. I'll talk to him as well. But it's not just, I'm just asking for those folks who are representatives to say, can you send that so we can provide clarification for folks in the community about the policy? Okay, well, I'm going to get out of y'all's hair because I know y'all have been.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the election, too.
Thank you. Great day.
Congratulations. All right, thank you. All right, we'll move on to item 6, discussion on the Solon Tower site and discuss possible inquiry to Johnson County for bond financing for tower construction.
So this item, Jeff, obviously in the last couple conversations has worked a little more because it's been some questions that he's been reaching out to between the tower company and us after I reached out to him initially. So Jeff wanted to provide kind of an update from a legal standpoint where we're at with this Solon Tower site and moving forward.
Just so the audio recording captures everything, we only have two supervisors here now, so what we're going to discuss is not an open meetings issue.
Yes.
We reached out to American Tower, the owner of, at background, so everyone's on the same page. We have a rather expensive lease at the Solon Tower. Sheriff Lakravic has pushed pretty consistently for 7 years to find a different solution. We are exploring those solutions. We don't have a definite solution today, but we're keeping you updated and talking about potential solutions. We reached out to American Tower to inquire about any interest they would have to sell the Solon Tower, and there is none. We've reached out to several different people, both by telephone and in writing, and the response is not even to open negotiations. It's just a flat no, we don't sell towers.
Yeah.
So that's the company policy.
Yeah.
We've also, Sheriff Lakravic, reached out to the Gleasons, the owner of the land on which the Solon Tower sits, and they are willing to sell us a portion of their property to put a tower on, if we're interested. We have no deal with them, but we at least know that's an option. The expense is not insignificant. We're looking at an expenditure for the tower itself of plus or minus $400,000, plus what we've typically done for land purchases in the past has been a $50,000 payment for approximately 4 acres. That's what we did with Stutzman's and Plots. Actually, I say that now. Plots has a slightly different deal,
yes, but
it's similar to that, based on that finances. And that's an expense that can be bonded for. But before we go ahead and go any further down this road, we would be relying on the county's bonding authority. And so is there interest in this group in going to the Board of Supervisors to just inquire their willingness to bond for this potential expense going forward with the ultimate expectation of reducing our ongoing annual expenditures?
I have an interest in doing this. If we can document how much we are spending annually right now on this lease on our current tower, and if we can, if this new tower, will it be owned by the county then? We will not have any future lease expenditures, so a bond is going to pay for outright the having of this tower and keeping it. We won't have any long-term rental costs to the property owners. We'll own the property, we'll own the tower.
You'll have to pay the bond off.
Yeah. That's what I'm getting at. We won't have many of these current commitments that we have. It'll all be in a bond payment.
There are some smaller ongoing expenses for all of our tower sites, but we would no longer have the tower lease, which is getting close to $30,000 a year.
Yeah, $2,500 a month, roughly.
$2,600. What's the break-even point? So if you say, I'm just going to spitball at $500,000, based on what we've been paying for tower lease and what we're projected to pay with that incremented growth that we know we've got in the lease, at what point are we at net zero on that?
sounds like 14 years.
I thought we ran a payback at one point, and it's somewhere. It wasn't within 10 years, but it was within 20, I thought.
Okay. Yeah, we did.
For some reason, I thought that had been there, but I didn't remember.
We did at the budget. That's when we did the number. That's when we presented the...
So it was within 20 years.
The quick math is about 13 years, unless the price goes up on per month.
One benefit we have, and we don't know about the area yet, because obviously that tower has lost tenants, but we don't know if it's lost tenants due to the uprising leases. We can always offer our tower then for co-locates in the future as a revenue generating piece. But again, the area where it's at, it hasn't been too enticing to cellular companies, for instance. One did pull off and put on a Solon water tower. One left that site to move, I'm assuming because they got a more lucrative deal. So there is some benefits that we have by owning it that we can offer, but we don't know what that would be. We don't know if there'd be interest.
That was one of the questions I had, was there any other potential
use?
Well, I was thinking more like, instead of us building a tower, can we put it on any place else and still get the coverage?
I kind of had the same question, and it goes back to the...
is there any other towers?
Tower issue as well. I don't know how much equipment the county needs up on the tower, and the Coralville Tower there, not that I'm trying to... stuff on the tower, but are there other existing towers right now that could provide a similar type of a service for the county without obligating us to construction?
In that area, there's really not. We public safety obviously avoids, I should say the hard and greater, probably the best practice would be to avoid water towers and things like that, for instance, just because they go down for maintenance a lot, and then you have to take a site off the air. There's so many things where we need to keep a site on the air that we can't take it down for other things, so they do avoid things like that. That's kind of a, when you're talking public safety grade, if you truly want to stick to that level that we've stuck to and the, you know, our level service that we offer, we would want to stick to more of the individual towers. And there's, in that area, again, it would happen now as part of this. This could go hand in hand with Harris's analysis for Oakdale. If there was any need to relocate due to that, because a lot of the ancillary, I call them the ancillary, but the filler sites that are around the county, Oakdale's the core. Sorry, I'm giving some history here, but Oakdale's the core. It covers over 80% of Johnson County alone. The other sites provide the coverage overlap. So as you look at our map, two sites are usually always, two to three are always covering one area. So with that, those outlying sites were strategically placed around where Oakdale lies.
Okay.
So that's one thing I have preached, and I said it again in that meeting. You just don't move it. The towers don't move that easily. So when you talk moving, Solon's okay because you're just going to pretty much be adjacent. We're not going to be moving miles or anything that could affect terrain. A lot of our stuff has been on location, terrain, height. That's given us the coverage we have. So if we stay there, we're okay. Now, if Oakdale would have to move, there may be potential to look a little bit, maybe within a few more extra miles radius that area, because you may want to move it. But as of right now, it could stay adjacent. And there's nothing.
Your signal alignment, things like that. But
yeah, it's.
Is there any restrictions on a tower such as the one that's in existence of putting another one close to it that company may have, where you can't put certain waves or something on that tower?
I'm going to get this a little wrong, so I haven't looked at it for 7 years, but the county has a rule that you don't want to have two towers next to each other in your...
Yeah, we have a fall zone issue also. So.
Yeah, well, what I remember reading was there's a preference not to put two towers right next to each other, and one of the reasons why we probably didn't pursue this in that first instance was that preference. And so that's an issue for us, is that, you know, we're on a bad lease, we're not happy with it, and what are we going to do about it?
What I was thinking is similar to, I think we were talking at one time with the water plant up, not in the city, but KXIC, and there was always this concern about the signal interfering with their signal for the radio station, things like that.
The main thing on that one was that's AM up there, and that's AM's really nasty to public safety radio bandwidth. But yeah, I recall what you're talking about, Pat. But you know, the one thing they can contest is that's going to microwave hop, and we pretty routinely still get those from FCC. Is that who sends them to us, Tom?
The
microwave hop interference.
Oh, when they're doing the studies of new sites going up around them, yes.
Yeah, I mean, someone could contest. I don't know if American Tower contested it. They don't have a microwave.
It's usually if it's a spectrum interference, so we wouldn't interfere with theirs. It'd be if a tenant on that tower had a same frequency or band that we would be interfering with being adjacent
we
to them.
We have capacity to bond. Our concern is what it does to our budget overall. We actually have other things we actually bond for on our maximum without going for a public code or whatever. And if there's things coming off out here yet, that might help offset it as well as the rent, help offset bond repayment.
Yeah. We started dropping things off in the next 5 years.
Yeah, I don't know if that will impact that yet. I'm going to keep my hat on as a member of JEXA. If I was a supervisor, what I would be looking for though is purely the justification. Ultimately, JEXA can make this request if we, as members of the Board of Supervisors, like it or not, as long as the policy board is comfortable with that. But the cordialness of this approach, I think, is certainly appreciative. We could have our finance folks get together with Tom pretty quickly and just kind of showcase how we would probably bond that out. Typically, that would be a short term, less than 3 years, and it wouldn't be a huge impact on our bonding capability. If you're looking at that kind of capacity, we typically, when we've been doing our bonding, has been keeping that level of taxation the same. And so what we've been doing is moving road projects in, additional road projects, if there was some room available to do so. But typically, this kind of smaller amount of money is that should not be a significant issue. I think what the Board of Supervisors, like Iowa City, like Corville, like North Liberty, I think we all just want to know what the justification is, and clearly looking at the cost breakpoint and the control and the uncertainties of American Towers seems pretty justifiable. Probably, you know, in retrospect, should have just been all done when we did it, but it is what it is.
I think the other thing, too, Terrence, and now I'd ask you to put your hat back on as a county supervisor. You recall that certain county board of supervisors came to this board and made the point that they wanted to keep our rates lower and that they offered up the use of the county's taxing/bond authority to do some of these things so that we didn't have to have a huge reserve so that we could keep our tax impact as minimal as possible. And I would think maybe somebody that has an affinity towards JEXA, who's also a county board of supervisor, could remind the board of that too.
Yeah, I think that's pretty prudent information. But it's also
that's my recollection.
It is. And you know, I mean, technically speaking, JEXA does not impact the general fund, which is the one that's capped.
It does affect the tax bill.
But it does affect the overall tax bill and ultimately our abilities to be able to push additional things inside our bonding. It's mostly, if anything else, if this is a policy decision to be made by this board, a courtesy to our finance folks that it's coming.
Yeah.
I think that would be a really good research.
A better handle on what the actual costs are. The cost of the tower,
that'd be
the property, and get a record to it.
But we're bringing the county in very early in these discussions,
and
keeping the county informed, and this is just to make sure that this board is okay with this next possible step, and we're not making a final decision, we're just saying, would the county potentially be interested in doing this? County gets a say in how it's going to be developed, and we're going to make sure that the justification is presented. And
I think that's a good
idea.
This
is mostly just to say, we tried to buy the tower, we failed.
The other thing that happens in these land acquisitions is sometimes the separate value is more expensive than the value of the whole. If you follow my question. Are we buying a piece of property that down the road, so to speak, has value beyond a site as a tower. I mean, have we done the mental gymnastics to understand, you know, what this could be used for? How is that value translated into a future asset at some point in the future if it's not a tower site? Would some farmer buy it back because this is a piece that they want to fit in? Or how does that all, have you thought about those things?
Well, can I describe what we've done in the past?
Yeah.
We bought like a 4-acre parcel from Stutzman, or we leased a 4-acre parcel from Plots, and then just take out the portions that we need for the tower and then the 3 guy wires, and we actually lease the balance of them.
Back to farm.
Okay. And so we have not, that's how we've done all of our deals in the past, because we also felt like we were being treated pretty fairly by Stutzman and Plots.
Sounds like it.
Through this. And so we've always said, use it as pasture for Plots, use it as farmland for Stutzman, and that was part of the deal.
And we usually take the worst section of the, but the non...
The least productive
piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's what it's been in both cases.
So it's a 4 or 5 acre purchase, but then it's like a 3 or 4 acre lease back.
Yeah.
Okay, and so then when we position the tower on the site, somebody mentioned fall zone before, and I think that's a good point to make. Can this thing fall completely on our property?
We have not had that with all of the other towers. And I don't know this. We have not talked with the Gleasons about the position of this on their property yet, other than to say that they're willing to do this type of deal. But we haven't gone so far as to locate it on their property yet.
I'm just, you know, again, these things do come down. And if it comes down, I would think that if we have the property, we would position it in such a fashion that it would come down on our property. All the repair work on our property.
They're designed in a manner that they don't go like this. The cable
is supposed to break.
Yeah. Yeah.
Supposed to collapse.
I know what they're supposed to do.
Well, I think the next step from Pat and I's perspective is that I'll ask the chairperson of the board, which is Pat, to put this on a board's agenda so that we can get direction to the finance committee and just so that we're publicly letting all the members of the Board of Supervisors know that there is this discussion that is beginning.
And I would just, as a sideline, I would commit that
we'll certainly
all
remind.
The people that are working on this project will be paid minimum wage.
Yes, at minimum.
And there is a, and just from our, just for another tidbit, when we get down this road, depending on what fiscal year, there's a $100,000 grant that I'm going to go after to put toward the project.
So. And they will be, because it's out in the country. I don't know what the cities are going to do. But
can I ask 2 questions to quickly get off of this topic? Before this is this partnership goes any further, which is a good idea, are we going to, as a board, study the impacts of moving this and have that as part of the package that we look at because of the fall zone? How many other tenants are on the current tower that we have that we could possibly have radio interference with? Will there be that information studied before we kind of continue down this road?
Yeah, we're on there today. We don't interfere with who's there today. That's already been done.
Okay.
But when we move it,
should not be a problem.
Yeah, because they're cellular. Okay. We're 800. They're different. We're operating way different frequencies. But there's only one other tenant today in the area, too, as well. So, but that'll, I'm sure, be part of Harris's. They have to go through and do all that radio frequency coordination, what do they call it, prior coordination notices and stuff. So, that'll all PCN. So those will all be.
Okay. And Jeff, the last question I have is, do we have a policy in place on land acquisition for this purpose or for, I mean, as a county, and I know North Liberty, and I'm sure Coralville and Iowa City, we have to follow a procedure of getting an appraisal on the property so that there's a fair market value provided to the landowner.
Are you talking about eminent domain or just the acquisition?
Just acquisition of property.
We don't have an official policy, although we would have, I'm not sure whether we filed, I can't remember now how we handled that 7 or 8 years ago, but I can go back and look at it, but we'll follow Iowa law and it depends on, I have not talked with the lease than Cheryl Poprovic has. So I don't know whether what he discussed was an outright purchase and a lease back, or they lease us the whole thing or back. But I know there's sort of a general willingness, but I can have a more detailed conversation with Cheryl Poprovic and the Gleasons and get an answer to you. I've never talked with the Gleasons, Cheryl Poprovic.
And the only reason that I ask is that I don't want there to be a perception a year from now or 10 years from now to see this possible purchase of land to be in any way some type of anything other than following procedure and guideline for how we make property acquisitions.
But I wouldn't expect that we're going to be... It's hard for me to imagine other situations where we would be acquiring property except for tower sites.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Is there a built-in rent increase on that property tower right now?
Mm-hmm. It's a maximum of 4% a year.
That's what I was kind of thinking over a period of time. Is it worth building a new tower in the long run? Like,
that's
where it says 15 years.
That's where the big escalation goes, 4% a year. New customers with them are over 5 right now. I just talked to a person that's inquiring with them for a different tower site, and they're over 5% escalation now. But we're locked in it.
All right. Everyone comfortable with that? Excellent. We'll look to item 7. This is kind of standard procedure, but to put on the agenda here, and that is a possible closed session for annual performance review of the executive director. Again, the process here at JEXA is that this is done through an executive team. In this particular case, myself along with John Lundell, who serves as the vice chair, and Dave Wilson, we went through and provided an evaluation of the director, and we have provided that. If there was any questions in regards to our concerns, we put this on here. We did not have any, but if there are other members of the JEXA policy board that do want to go and discuss that further, we certainly are available to do that. So is there anyone that wants to do that? I'm not seeing any. So that information, Tom said he is comfortable to share the actual evaluation that we gave to any of the members. And if you're interested in looking at the actual evaluation, just communicate with Tom, or you can communicate with me, and I will forward that over to you via email. All right? All right. We'll move to item 8, other business. Item A is setting the dates for the November and December policy board meetings due to holidays. We have two, November 20 and December 18. Tom, what are you thinking?
So those the dates that I propose in there are the week, moving the meeting up a week. To those dates because of the 4th and 5th holidays in November, December. This time every year, we always fall on policy board dates. So we're subject to any dates. I just threw out the Friday before Thanksgiving and the Friday before the Christmas holiday. Again, in the past, we've done meetings on Tuesdays, I know, because these are primarily the budget meetings, so we've done some of them.
So we don't do an October...
We do not. We miss skip October. We meet November and December. And sometimes December ends up changing based on November. If we decide to change any of the budget stuff and then are publishing no less than 10, no more than 20 requirements, we sometimes have to move the December date to fall into that, depending on any changes we make. So these, again, are very tentative, but the November date would probably be one that would affect things the most.
Yeah, November 20... should not be a conflict, other than maybe Lonnie may have a conflict. The Iowa State Association of Counties convention is that those November 18, 19, and 20. They're in Cedar Rapids, so and I can certainly skip some of that. Lonnie is the second vice chair of the state organization, so I'm not sure what his calendar would be for that.
Well, that would be on Friday, so that's the last day. Isaac, right? Mm-hmm. What's that load look like? Is that usually affiliate breakout?
It's typically schmoozing with your colleagues in regards to legislative affairs at that point on that last day, that morning. Schmoozing meaning?
Hard work.
Actually, probably the most work you get done is when you have a chance to actually talk to your colleagues on those kinds of... But at 7:30 to 8:30 in the morning, I'm not sure if it'll be too much of a conflict or not, depending on scheduling. Most of the business is done on
the 18th and 19th.
Do those dates work for me?
Everyone else comfortable? Okay, let's keep it at this point. Lonnie can always invite Pat or another member of the board to join. Okay, and then on December 18th, everyone okay with that?
Yes. Yep.
All right. We'll keep them, Tom.
Okay.
Any other business?
Yeah, just for clarification, so where are we at on this lead and green proposal then? I mean, I guess I wasn't clear what we expected out of Tom for the lead and green proposal on the solar. Are we going to have that team come back to the next board meeting, which would
be... Is everyone comfortable with that?
November 20th, or what's the direction we're giving him on that?
We could bring those folks to come in to at least provide further information and answer questions.
Yeah, that'd be
fine. Everyone okay with that?
Well,
that'd be a good
way
to do it.
It seems to me that you can't really make a decision without facts.
Yeah, correct.
So what do we have? What's being proposed? What's the cost differential? What's the amortization schedule? You know, what are the tax credits? What's the timelines? That's the kind of stuff we need to look
different
at.
Different companies are a little different. They're close.
Yeah. I think
the big question here is, where do we put it? It's kind of, you have to provide more properties.
That would be a part of that study, too. We gave them all that direction and said we wanted more information. We can have them bring that all back to the next...
Perhaps maybe in the spring, after the first of the year, have them meet with us. And we've got budget things, and they've got a lot of homework to do. So.
I would say the sooner the better on this, John. As you can see by the name on my shirt, this is what I do for a living, and that project over there is ours. To speak on behalf of those folks that are part of this green team with the county, they understand this process almost as well as we do, and I think there are a tremendous amount of information. I would imagine that the amount of time would probably be 15 minutes or less that they would need, and they can provide documentation.
Just for more information, they can bring that back on
because
at least.
Because the tax credits, as Terrence said, are going to expire at the end of next year as they're currently written right now. So
it'll be a budget decision.
Yeah,
too.
It will be a budget decision possibly for this coming year, but most certainly it would need to be one to have before the end of next year. So the sooner you can be aware of this information, the better off we'll all be.
So are we going to get an analysis at the next meeting? We're not just going to get talking yet.
I would anticipate that with these folks, they will have documentation, sour tight array locations, all of that ready
to
go.
It'd be nice to see that in the packet before the meeting.
Yep.
Yeah, they provide secondary roads when they provided really wasn't apples to apples, so we really couldn't send you a sample of their analysis. They gave us a sample of what they draw up over 50 years. So I did ask them to put one together for us. We just knew it wouldn't be in time for this meeting because we just met with them. But she did offer to do that. Again, they just offered to do it because they were the experts. They approached me, and I would have to rely on someone for that information. So,
being the expert, do they run inverters across the road?
No, everybody's right there on site.
You don't have to convert.
The inverters are located on the array, and they can't. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant we technically run them under Melrose Avenue. No, they are on the site. The inverters happen right there under each one of the modules.
Okay. So that's built into the cost.
Yes.
Okay. And is there isn't any battery packs?
Not at this time. No.
Okay. They're running it through the inverter into the direct in line, and then.
Correct.
If there isn't demand for it, what happens to the energy? Can you sell it back here in the state yet or not?
Well, and that's what they can get into. Each utility company has a different regulation.
Different.
Yeah, Mid-American
Who is
Energy.
Our company?
Mid-American Energy is this one here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right now, they're not accepting, but they're getting
pressure right now.
Yeah. PPM, PPA or something.
PPA.
PPAs. Yeah.
Purchase power.
Power purchase agreements.
Back, you know, the facility across the road, and then any excess right now would just be...
Right now, there cannot be any excess, according to the power purchase agreement written through Mid-American Energy. The power purchase agreement written through Alliant Energy is different, but the one written through Mid-American is there cannot be any excess. So
does that control the capacity of the system?
Yes, it does. Yeah, they cannot produce all of their energy over there because they're limited in the PPA language in Mid-American Energy.
Can you say 25%?
I don't recall from Becky's comments.
She
kicked out.
Well, let's bring him out.
Yeah.
Let's we'll continue the conversation. All right. Any other business?
So they're going to be back on the 20th of November then?
That's
consideration for motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone against? All right. We are adjourned.
Is this anyone's pen? It made its way back around the table.
No, it is.
All right.